Animal Central on cliffcentral.com.
Good morning, Wednesday. It is yet again, and it's time for Animal Central with your host Sharon Dale and Ainsley. Hey, hi Ainsley. Hi. It's been a good week for you so far?
It's been a busy week.
Busy week.
Busy but productive.
I know, and we're only halfway through.
Yes.
We're only halfway through.
But the weekend
through.
Is in sight, thank heavens.
It is in sight. And I think one of the things we're going to talk about later on with Dr. Clint Austin from Bayer is heat stroke mm-hmm. in animals, because this heat...
I've almost got heat stroke in this heat, never mind.
Really?
Being a little hairy puppy dog.
Yeah, it is just beyond anybody who's in Johannesburg at the moment knows how hot it has mm-hmm. been. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later. And then you had some other news about an outreach program that you're doing.
I am so excited. It's one of my biggest passions as a veterinary nurse. I'm very privileged to be working with French Bulldog Rescue South Africa.
Yes.
And we've got a tiny little Facebook page, and we basically use our privileged position with these very sought-after popular dogs to use that as a platform to help uplift the community and the animals in the Tozerfee area of the Western Cape.
Okay.
So basically, it's been done in the past, but we're doing another outreach. We're doing
yes.
it on the 26th of October, so I haven't given myself much notice, but we're aiming on sterilizing 55 animals in one day.
Wow.
So we're going to work
wow.
our vets very hard, and I'll be running around like a headless yes. chicken. But it's so amazing, because one of the easiest ways to improve the welfare of animals in impoverished mm. areas is to sterilize
them.
Because uncontrolled breeding, unwanted animals, causes so much unnecessary cruelty.
Yes.
So we're doing a huge drive for this. Basically, it's 385 rand per animal. So we've got to raise about 21,000 rand.
Wow.
And we're asking for support. And, you know, it's such a tangible thing, because
yes.
for that amount of money, you will save hundreds of animals
lives.
From suffering,
yes.
and you'll help
yes.
that one animal.
Absolutely.
So we're asking, please go onto our Facebook page. It's French Bulldog Rescue South Africa, and see if you can help us. Even if you just share our posts and get the word out there, any money that we can get, really, it makes such a huge difference to this area. And it's about a 50-kilometer stretch, so we really
yes.
can manage the population and improve the conditions dramatically.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen so many of these spay and neuter initiatives at the moment, and they're absolutely fantastic, because as you say, the knock-on effect,
it's amazing,
is incredible.
Yeah.
You are sparing so much, these little lives.
Mm.
You're sparing them suffering and possible euthanasia. And yet, it still goes on. In my area, this weekend, I heard puppies crying down the road. Peek over walls. There, somebody's bred their bulbuls.
And for what?
You know, a whole lot of little puppies there. And you think, for what?
Mm-hmm.
When the shelters are so jam-packed.
Exactly.
So jam-packed. And you get bulbuls in rescue, in shelters.
Oh, lots and lots.
There is just no reason to breed.
Nope.
There really, really isn't. But there's a lot of fun events going on at the moment. I mean, I was listening. Yesterday was the Save by the Dogs initiative. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
No.
That's a great one in Cape Town. What they actually do is Tears Animal Rescue and Hills Pet Food have actually come together, and they've done this. You go down to the gardens, the company gardens in Cape Town, and you go and take some of the Tears shelter dogs for a walk.
Wonderful.
So in your lunch hour, get away from the stress, get away from all the hassles of business world and traffic, head down to the company gardens and go and take these dogs for a walk. Huge amount of fun. I know people that went on the last one said it was such a nice break to the day, and they'll never forget it. And there's one taking place today, the 14th. The next one's on the 11th of November, and then the 9th of December. So if you want to know more about it, you can follow hashtag Saved by the Dogs, or you can contact Tears Animal Rescue at 021-785-4482. And who knows, you might fall in love with one of the little doggies that you take for
Hopefully
a walk.
Hopefully so.
Yeah. But now, talking about events, our first guest today is Dale. Now, Dale Robin, you are one of the organizers of the wonderful Mutters Waterworks.
Yes. Hi, Sharon. Waterworks is actually a new event for us.
Oh, really? Because Mutters was earlier this year.
Yes.
I'll be honest, it was the best event I'd attended. It was so much fun.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, we started the social network and decided that dog people prefer to be outside than sitting behind a computer. So we decided to do the first annual Dog Day last year in November. We were so taken aback by the response that we got, that we decided not to wait another year and did another one in May, which we were very privileged to have you come.
Yes.
And
it was so much fun.
It was fantastic. So again, people started moaning at us in about June, saying, please don't make us wait another year. And bearing in mind the South African summer, we decided that the best thing we could do for the dogs was to bring water into the mix.
Okay.
So we are essentially turning the Ball and All driving range in Lanseria into a dog park full of water.
A mud pit.
A mud pit. It's going to be a water park for dogs. We've got the most incredible things lined up. And especially in the current heat wave, we're hoping that people come and take advantage of that with their dogs.
Yes.
And
the dog's owner's allowed to get in the water as well.
I don't think they're going to have much of a choice. I think that is the we have sprinklers that will be coming on at random times throughout the day. And
so no white t-shirts then?
Well,
you've got to have a wet t-shirt competition.
That's what's going to get the
fathers. Can we do some fundraising? Can we do some fundraising for our favorite NPOs?
We can auction off the girls and their white t-shirts. But that is the motivation for the dads to be there, is the white t-shirts. I'm sure there will be girls in bikinis. I'm just saying. But yes, we've got lots of things lined up. We've got a couple of demos lined up. We've got the ladies from the Dancing Dogs coming again.
Oh, lovely.
They are fantastic. They've been with us every single time, and the entertainment value is huge. And then we're obviously also supporting a couple of charities. Mm. We've given away 10 free slots for the charities to come and set up their stalls.
Brilliant.
Make themselves aware. Ninth Day, can I list them?
Oh, yeah. Please do.
We've got the Ninth Day, who many people on Facebook will know from Bismarck.
Yes.
Everyone's following Bismarck quite closely.
Week, yeah.
So Ninth Day is going to be there. We've also got Irwin Animal Rescue Centre. We've got Wet Nose. We've got Animal Instincts MPO. Husky Romy Wolf Sanctuary, who have been at all of our events. They're awesome. Sandpaper Kisses, which is a new one.
Oh, I haven't heard of them.
Cutest name in the world.
Yes.
They deal a lot with cats, but obviously with the dogs as well, so that's why they'll be at Mutters. And then we've got Animals in Distress. We've also got Mischief Rat Rescue, which is a strange one, but they're going to be there regardless. Mm. So they're awesome. She does wonderful work with the rats. And then Highveld Horse Care Unit, because dog people are generally horse people.
Yes.
So
yes.
Those are our charities. And then we've also got an awesome sponsor on board. If I just like
Supreme,
to say,
Supreme, is it?
Supreme Pet is back for the third time.
Fantastic.
Marty Victor and her team are unbelievable.
Mm.
They're sponsoring all our prizes. So we've got games and stuff. And
they're wonderful people. I work closely with Yvette, who writes articles for the magazine.
Yeah.
They really have their hearts in the right place.
They do a weekly charity giveaway.
Yes, they do.
It's just every single week they're giving away stuff.
Huge amounts of food.
They're incredible. And they're so organized. And so they're coming to, we've got games to play, which is where the owners are going to start getting filthy dirty. And it's the entertainment value is going to be huge. So I hope everybody will come along. It's the 1st of November.
Yes.
How do people apply to come along? Is there tickets? Or?
Tickets are at the gate. They, if I'm not mistaken, 20 rand a ticket. You get them at the gate, nothing. And it's basically just to cover the venue and the fun stuff.
Yes.
And then you can come in and support your charities directly once you're inside. And then you can enter on the day for the games. We've got some fun stuff. We've got the balloon and spoon race. We're going to be shooting each other with water pistols and generally going back to being children.
We have to be there and interview some people.
I agree.
Absolutely, we'd love that. And then, as I say, you can get tickets at the gate, but you can find out all the information on Facebook. We have got a Facebook page event. It's just Mutters Waterworks. And then also, obviously, the Mutters website, which is mutters.co.za.
Now, I want to ask you, when I was there, one of the best, the events that you ran that I actually judged was the dress-up competitions. Are you going to do that again?
There are no fancy dresses this time. What we are going to be doing, however, is we're going to be doing a Mr. and Miss Mutters Day Waterworks. So we're going to ask
for the human.
For the dogs.
Oh, for the dogs.
So I don't know if you recall last time we had the little Jack Russell who had his whole sun tanning maneuver going down. She rubbed sunscreen on his belly and it was very cute. So we got a Mutters Got Talent, and we're going to try and get them to do it, do their tricks summer style, and we will be giving the prizes according to who's got the best summer mojo on the day.
Brilliant.
Yeah. That sounds like so much. You see, I mean, an event like that where it's so much fun for the human as
and
well
the
as
animal,
the dog.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And what day and time is that again?
It's 1st of November. We're opening gates at 10 o'clock and we'll run through till 3. There'll be plenty of shade. We have got a pub and restaurant on site, lots of food stalls. So plenty of space for people to sit and just chill and relax and obviously get very damp and very muddy.
Yes.
So
yes.
We do hope everyone will come along. There's something for everyone. We've got jumping castles for the kids. And if anything, the last couple of events, anything to go by, more fun for the adults than the dogs.
Absolutely. Yes. We didn't want to leave last time. It was so much fun. I bought gorgeous dogs pillows and the stands that you had. They were also great.
We've got a lot of stalls. There's a whole market space full of everything dog related, animal related. So bring lots of money and everyone walks away with shopping bags full of stuff.
No, because it's good stuff that you don't see anywhere else.
Good quality stuff. Yeah. The South African traders that we get in are very, you know, it's proudly South African stuff. Awesome. It really is fantastic.
It's perfect for Christmas shopping. Christmas is coming up.
Exactly.
It's for a good cause. It's for a great cause.
If I can just give one more shout out to one of our other sponsors, Billabone. She is Anita from Billabone. She has done a range of dog bandanas, which I feel every dog owner should actually own one, because it's very clever. It's things like a yellow bandana saying, please don't approach me.
I've seen that in England.
Yes. Or I'm in training, or, you know, my dog's just wearing a red one saying I'm cute, you know.
Yes, it's
one of those things. So, and then all the bandanas can get wet, so if you can wet them and it helps cool your dog down. So she will be there with her stuff on sale, and the stuff is amazing quality. And, you know, for deaf dogs there's a white one, and so it goes. She must come. Everyone must come and check her out.
I must actually get hold of her for them for Canine Zone magazine, because I'd love to do an article on that, because a lot of people don't know that whole system. I know, is it the yellow one? Hey, don't
yellow
touch.
Red.
Yes. And I think we need to do an article on that, because people don't know what they mean.
You know, one of the questions I got asked before the previous event was, how do you get, because the last event had 800 dogs at it.
Okay.
Wow. And we were all on leashes, and oftentimes you'll hear people saying, oh, that's the worst thing you can do because dogs are going to fight. And we had 800 dogs on leashes and not a single issue. And the reason we did not have a single issue was because everyone was respectful of the dogs and their bandanas. And she only made 20 of them. And within the first hour that people had cottoned on to what these things were, 20 were gone, sold. And the clients came up, the people came up to me afterwards and said what a difference it made to their day. Because instead of having to haul their dog around by the neck because people kept crowding them, they were given a wide berth. So it's an amazing initiative. And I really support, you know, even when you go to Walkhaven on a Sunday, it's something that your dog should be wearing.
Should be wearing.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, absolutely. And I must say, Dale, you guys have really done a great job with promoting the event.
Thank you.
I think that's also what really helps to make events successful. You know, some of them are so quiet and nobody knows about it, but you've always been out there and promoted it.
My business partner, Meryl, is amazing at that. Meryl Rosenberg is our social media guru, and she gets all of the events out there. Facebook's an incredible marketing tool. And I'd encourage the MPOs and that to make use of it, because it's these days the only way people hear about you.
And if you missed all the information, we've actually done, Dale, an article in the current issue of Canine Zone.
Thank you.
Which is on shelves at the moment. So you can read about it in there. You can get the address. You can get the times, the dates, who to contact as well. And at the same time, you can also read a great article on how to help your dogs cope with grief. I love this article.
Delicious.
It's actually written by an American lady who has written books and who's helped people cope with the death of their dogs. And you don't realize that dogs can also suffer when their playmate or you know, passes away. So go out and get the current issue, and as I say, you can find out more about this event as well. I'll definitely be there. I can't wait.
We can't wait to see you, Sharon.
Can't
thank you
wait.
So much for the opportunity.
I won't be wearing
chat.
A white t-shirt.
I
think that would chase a lot of the people away. No, thanks so much,
Thank
Dale.
You, Sharon.
And then talking about cooling down and getting into the water and the heat wave, I now want to speak to Dr. Clint Austin. Thank you for coming back again. You're a regular guest. And it's so great to have you here today, because we spoke last week about this heat wave and the summer coming up and how dogs can overheat very, very quickly. You know, in cars, being taken for a walk, or being put outside where there's no shelter. Don't you want to tell us a little bit more about heat stroke? What is it?
Sure. Hi, Sharon. Hi, Ainsley. Hi. Nice to see you guys. Look, heat stroke, in order to understand heat stroke, you need to first understand how dogs thermoregulate. And the dog's most important mechanism for thermoregulation is the respiratory system. Remember, dogs can't sweat like we do. They have some sweat glands on the nasal planum, so basically it's sort of the top surface of the nose, and between their foot pads. That's the
really?
Only place they can sweat.
So not in their armpits
or
their, what do you call
not
the
at
leg?
All.
No.
No, not at all. So dogs rely very heavily on their respiratory system to thermoregulate, and that's why when it gets hot, dogs pant. That's what they do, because they're exchanging heat. Now, put a dog in a situation where his respiratory system is taxed or cannot function as efficiently as it normally would in order to exchange heat, you're going to run into trouble. Mm. And that's why we see where our breeds most predisposed to heat stroke are your brachycephalic breeds or those flat-faced breeds. So we're talking bulldogs, French bulldogs, anything with a flat nose, basically.
Yes.
Struggle, because we know they don't have the most efficient of respiratory systems. And put them in any kind of situation where they really need to pant and they need to breathe fast and they need to breathe efficiently, those are going to be dogs that are going to be affected first.
Yes, yes. And I mean, as we were saying earlier, let's look first at keeping a dog in a car. You know, even if you go shopping for 5 minutes with the window slightly open, it's still going to affect them.
Absolutely. And bearing in mind what I've just said, where they use their respiratory system to thermoregulate, you're sitting in a hot car, and we know how quickly the temperatures inside the car will climb. I mean, within 5 minutes, you can go 35 degrees plus.
Mm.
Now the dog is breathing in air that is hotter than his own body temperature. Mm. How does he thermoregulate? Right, so that becomes a very, very big problem. Also, just want to touch on the fact that heat stroke or suspected heat stroke is a medical emergency. All right, so this is not something we should try and treat at home and let's see how we go and then decide to go to the vet later. It's a medical emergency.
It's a medical emergency. So if you've got a dog in the car, I know a lot of people like taking their little dogs with them. If you have to run into a shop, is there any safe amount of time you can leave a dog in a car? Is it a no-no in the summer?
It's going to depend on the weather. I mean, I've been in Canada for the last 10 days. I've been watching the weather here, and it's been unbelievable, the temperatures we're having. We desperately need some rain.
Yes.
So if you're sitting in a day like we've been having, the last 35, 36 degrees, you can't even leave your dog in a car for 2 minutes.
Okay.
It's going to get really, really hot.
Mm.
But, you know, if you're talking about a sort of cold, cloudy, overcast day and you've cracked the windows and there's enough fresh air, okay, sure, but use your discretion.
Yes.
I mean, and you want to do that, just think, would you leave your child in the car?
Right.
There's your
sadly
comparison.
Some people.
Yeah, I was just
as I said that, I thought maybe that's not the best comparison. But you can also just think how if you were sitting in that vehicle in the sun, how quickly would you become uncomfortable?
Because you're quite right. If you stop your car in a parking lot when you get in, I mean, the other day in the West Rand, it was 38 degrees.
Yeah. Correct. Correct. Mm. So I'm not a fan of leaving dogs in cars.
No.
I'm really not. Particularly just, you know, dogs getting anxious, particularly dogs that can destroy and wreck your vehicle at the same time.
Yes.
But it's really not safe.
So what happens in that case in the car? They overheat?
So what happens, they tend to overheat. Now your body's thermoregulatory mechanisms or dog's thermoregulatory mechanisms are not able to cope. So now the body, which is designed to operate at specific temperatures, now have been forced to cope with much higher temperatures. Those higher temperatures have a wide range of effects, but a lot of it is damage to cells and damage to organs. And in fact, that's the sort of probably the most serious sequelae of heat stroke is organ failure, particularly kidney failure. And that is something we need to be very, very careful of, which sort of brings us to emergency treatment of heat stroke.
Yes.
You know,
what are the signs? What are the classic signs that an owner should look out for and be alert to?
Obviously, the first thing you need to think of is your dog is not well. He's quiet. He's possibly panting more than he should be. Not eating, or obviously just not himself. The first thing you're going to think of is, okay, what did we do today? If you were out walking in the hot sun, there wasn't enough water around, your dog has been stuck in a hot car, or possibly out in a hot backyard. How many people go to work every day and leave their dogs in the back? There's absolutely
no
shelter
shade,
whatsoever. And in this heat wave, a small backyard with no air circulation, dogs are going to struggle. So you get home, your dog's displaying symptoms of lethargy, listlessness, possible panting, even collapse, okay, battling to breathe. There's a history of exposure to severe heat. Then you've got a good chance that you've got heat stroke on your hands. But there aren't any very symptoms that are specific to heat stroke.
Sure.
You could look at it and say, okay, this is definitely heat stroke.
Right.
It's very non-specific related to the dog not feeling well.
But in this weather, everyone should just be completely on the alert.
Absolutely.
And if you think there's any reason that it's heat stroke, just rather take
them
straight
to the vet.
Absolutely,
if you're concerned. And
is this a veterinary situation? You need to get to
this is a medical emergency.
Okay.
All right. It really is. The dog's
so it's not something you can try and treat at home.
No. You can initiate some emergency treatment at home in the meantime, but you need to go to the vet.
What would you need to do?
I think the easiest thing to do is probably just put some ice packs in the axilla, so that's the armpits, and in the groin area in the inguinal regions. You've got big, major blood vessels flowing through those areas, and that is probably the most efficient way.
Where's the inguinal area?
Inguinal area. So that's the groin area. Uh-huh. Sort of.
I learned something today.
We'll call them the hind limb armpits. How's
okay.
that?
Okay. I like that. Next time I was in a meeting, I was going to throw that out. You know, the inguinal area of a dog.
So put some ice packs in there, all right, or at least some cold water. And that is probably a very efficient way. Obviously, with those major blood vessels flowing through there, it's going to cool the blood. There's a lot of sort of back and forth, but the general consensus about dumping the dog into a bath of cold water is not great. Remember, cold water in the skin causes your blood vessels to constrict in the skin. That's a natural reflex. So what's going to happen is you've now got less blood going to the skin, and the dog's even less able to thermoregulate. Really just pack some ice packs into those inguinal and axillary areas and off to the vet as fast as possible.
And then what would the vet do? What is the treatment?
Generally what tends to happen is you get these dogs into IV fluid therapy as fast as possible, and also cool them down. So those are your top two priorities. Is to cool them down, and generally those two go hand in hand in that you can cool the intravenous fluid that's going into the dog. You can cool that just by running the drip line through some cooled water, and that very effectively cools them down.
Yes.
Once you've got their body temperature down, you've got them stabilized, then you need to get their blood perfusion up because we're worried about renal failure and organ failure, and then high doses of corticosteroids, all right, for the anti-inflammatory effect to try and counter the damage that the heat stroke is doing.
So it really is an emergency.
Oh, no, it's a huge emergency.
Yeah, absolutely.
Practices come to a halt when you get a heat stroke, and it's drop everything and attend to that animal.
And you'd think people would, well, I'm hoping people listen to this and get it. And now, what about you saying earlier, and we were talking about taking your dogs to an event or a dog park or something like that, in this hot weather, is it something that you can do safely? What precautions should you be taking? Can you take your dogs for walks when we're having a wee heat wave?
Yes, of course you can. Remember, a normal dog is able to thermoregulate quite well by panting.
Yes.
And I say normal dog. I don't consider Brachycephalic Breeds terribly normal.
And my gust is going to bite you for that. Bite or fart.
That's why I'm sitting on the other side over here.
She's a French bulldog girl.
I know.
It makes me even better. Gus is the best. He's the most normal creature ever. You notice I say creature.
I reserve comment. And so, bearing in mind, if it's an extremely hot day, am I going to take my bulldog or my French bulldog for a walk? Okay, but then make sure you've got some cool water along. Make sure there's some water along the way, or some shade, or somewhere that you can stop and rest.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And probably early morning and late afternoons would be best.
You have to be responsible owner when you have a dog like that.
Absolutely.
I mean, Gus Poo, he will come to matters, but he will be repeatedly dunked in water throughout the day, and he will be monitored with an eagle eye.
Bear in mind, dogs that have got a fairly excitable temperament will work themselves up.
Yeah.
You know, they get very, very excited, and that drives their body temperature up. And if they can't thermoregulate, or there isn't a means for them to sort of get rid of some of that excess body heat, they may well struggle. So some dogs, I mean, don't swim by themselves. Other dogs, you can't keep them out of the water. Mm. But if there is no water really available, you should probably be carrying some water along in water bottles, any number of commercial products available, water bottles for dogs, that they can drink on a regular basis. And you can wet them down a little bit if you need to.
Okay, so that does help, keeping them cool with water.
Correct.
Another important thing for those breeds, pugs, bulldogs, French bulldogs, is never to use a collar on them, because now they've got such effort to pant and to breathe as it is. If you're putting a collar on and you're restricting them that way, that also has a serious effect. So always use harnesses on your Bostons, your pugs, all of those. That also makes a big difference.
That's a good idea. Now, I read that if you can't put your hand on the tarmac for longer than 5 seconds, shouldn't be taking your dog for a walk, because they can also burn their paws.
Of course. I mean, their foot pads are fairly sensitive. And although they walk on their foot pads all day long, and they're probably a little bit more hardy than the skin of your hands, that heat travels through the foot pads. It gets transferred. And also that then makes it soft. It makes them more susceptible to damage. So just think of your dog's comfort levels.
Yes.
You know, probably not the best idea to go and do 20 Ks with your bulldog in the middle of a hot summer's day.
No, not a good idea at all. And what about water? And you should always make sure there's water available. Is there a difference now between heat stroke and dehydration?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Heat stroke is the body temperature that has gone too high. dehydration is excessive loss of body water. Although the two probably go hand in hand, you've got a dog with heat stroke, he is in all likelihood dehydrated, but a dehydrated dog is not necessarily suffering from heat stroke.
Okay. Now, a dehydrated dog, that the causes of that can be heat and no water available.
Correct.
Can be illness.
Can be illness. It could be diarrhea, vomiting. Anything that causes the dog to lose excessive amounts of water, or a dog that doesn't take in enough water,
yes,
will cause dehydration, which can also be a medical emergency depending on how far along they're dehydrated. You know, dogs can, we can probably, and even humans can tolerate maybe a 2 to 3% loss of body water that you can probably replace orally and be okay. Anything above that, you know, you're starting to run into a bit of trouble there, and
yes,
you probably need some sort of fluid therapy replacement.
And now, I was always told that you can see if a dog's dehydrated by lifting their skin and pinching the skin. Is that true? Is that accurate?
It does. What it's called skin tinting. So, and the same is true for humans as well. Although by the time, this, so what happens is it's more visible in horses. Dogs, you know, have got a thick coat. It's a little bit more difficult to see,
yes,
but you basically, you pinch the skin, and in a normal skin that's well hydrated and elastic, the skin will just drop back normally. In a dehydrated animal, that skin stays tinted. But by the time that you're starting to see skin tinting, you're already sort of pushing past 5 or 7% dehydration, which really means you're in a bit of trouble. Capillary refill time is a fairly good indicator. Sharon, I mean, we can demonstrate on here if you like, but if you lift your dog's lip and you press the pink gum,
you'll smudge my lipstick, darling.
if you have a normal pink gum and you press on it, it goes white. And then the amount of time that it takes to go pink again is obviously an indicator of blood pressure, and which is obviously related to hydration. So, a dog,
so you press on the gum and then see how long it takes for the colour to come back.
Yeah, generally you want that pink colour to come back in under 2 seconds. Anything sort of above that could be an indicator of low blood pressure, not necessarily dehydration.
Ah.
But dehydration obviously means there's a hypovolemia,
yes,
so you don't have enough water, and that could cause low blood pressure. Again, not the most sensitive indicator, but it can give you an idea.
Because I've heard you can do that to check circulation.
You can. The other thing, dogs that are dehydrated, their gums and mucous membranes become quite tacky. So instead of being wet and slobbery and slimy, they almost feel a bit sticky. And that is also an indicator of possible dehydration.
I mean, as long as you've got enough water, a dog will drink when it's thirsty, normally.
Yes, yeah. Correct. Yeah, they just need to drink, and obviously, again, water and heat. Just be aware of the heat.
Because you'd be amazed how, again, how many people would probably go off to work in the day and forget to fill up the water bowl.
And in this heat, the water's evaporating
a
lot quicker.
Correct.
So you've really got to be really attentive about your animals, all animals in this heat.
Yes. No, definitely. And there's one more thing I want to find out now. We're talking about dogs swimming. I've got dogs that will not go near the pool. But, you know, a lot of people's dogs are always in the water and whatever. And in fact, my son's girlfriend went and got one of those kiddie, you know, the shells, the sand pits for her two little pugs to swim in, because they love water.
Huh?
Drowning, that's something that you also probably need to be aware of in
Absolutely.
This summer season, because pools are open, nets are off.
You're spot on.
Correct, yeah. Particularly with small dogs that are unable to climb out of the pool by themselves and don't know to swim to the step.
Yes.
Certain dog breeds just aren't good swimmers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your brachycephalic.
Yeah, Gus is a swimmer. I took him first day to walk heaven.
Yes.
I trundled out halfway into the pond and I dropped him to sea.
And he can swim.
And now he hippos out of his own free will. He finds the muddiest, nastiest bit of water and he hippos and rolls in it and then gets in my car and rolls in my car. He loves me.
Gotta love them.
No, well, that's great. I mean, I had a Staffy that used to, if he fell in the water, he'd sink like a stone.
Yeah, but that's why it's so important.
Down.
And there's been deaths at dog parks of people who take their dogs to dog parks. They're around big bodies of water and they don't check. You have to check and literally take your dog in with you, guided. That's why I like the harness, because it's literally like a dog on a handle.
You can lift
you
it.
Drop them and you see what they do. And also, the best way you can check if they've got a swimming reflex, as you put them down towards, they'll start paddling frantically.
Okay.
And you can sort of, it's not mean, it's for the best the best of them, but you sort of dunk them just to try and get that swimming reflex really going.
Yes.
And then guide them and make
and
sure that they head
see.
Also make sure that they're heading, they know how to head inland as opposed to out into the deeper area. But you have to check that with your dogs if you're going to take them to areas. And if you've got swimming pools, always keep them covered, or get little steppies that are a special ramp that's made, because even Well, especially with dogs that are older, you know, owners will have them for years and years and years, and as they get older, they're arthritic. It's harder for them to get down and drink water, and they fall in and they can't get out. So you need to either completely seal off the pool, make it inaccessible, or have a ramp so they can get out easily.
And it's interesting that you say that. I was at Walkhaven a few weeks ago, and there was a lady with two pugs, and she literally went and flung them in to the water, and they sank. And she literally, we were panicking, going, oh, I nearly got my son to jump in, and she jumped in and brought them out again. But I'd like the idea to have a harness and be in
the
water.
That works like a charm. Gus is now a hippo, so it worked.
Yeah. And now if you come across your dogs in the pool, is there anything you can do, resuscitation techniques?
Yeah, the CPR in dogs can be done. The first thing I would do is, obviously, if you come across your dog in the pool, again, it's get to the vet as soon as possible. You can try and sort of, just try and pump the water out the lungs, or sort of hang them upside down, try and get as much water out the lungs as possible. CPR instead of mouth to mouth is mouth to nose in dogs. Okay. So you've got to sort of close their mouth, and generally sort of put your whole mouth over their nose and use their nose to do CPR. If you know CPR and you're trained in CPR, the principles are the same.
Okay.
But again, if there's any kind of situation, you just get them to the vet as soon as humanly possible. Absolutely.
Yeah, it is. It's scary. It's a really, really scary. I mean, summer is a wonderful time of the year, but there are dangers out there for our best friends. And I'm sure the same applies to cats. I don't know if cats suffer from heat stroke as well, they move.
They tend to be a little bit more sensible than our canine friends. And they're not ones for running around and going crazy. And they usually find some shade and relax. So I don't think I've ever treated a case of heat stroke in a cat.
Persians can get it, but only generally when they don't have areas to get away. Correct. If they're forced into the sun and they can't get out of heat.
Flat-faced breeds.
Yes. Again.
Special little munchkins.
Dr. Clint, thank you so much for joining us again. And we're going to have you back again in the next couple of weeks, because we missed you the first week of this month because you were overseas.
I was.
Wonderful. But did you enjoy it?
I did. It was good. I was in Canada for about a week, back to winter temperatures so the 0 degrees, 12 degrees, but fabulous experience. Just trying to sort of convince my body that I'm back on South African time now.
No, thank you so much for joining us again. And Dale, thank you. We will definitely see you at Mutter's Waterworks. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Looking forward to
it. We're going to take a little quick song break, and we'll be back with Corinne Spottiswood.
This is CliffCentral.com.
And we're back. We've got a message here in from Sebeko. He's saying, my housemate's cat just had four kittens. What should he be doing at the moment? He's selling one for 350. Ainsley, do you want to take this one?
Yes. Well, thanks for contacting us first, Sebeko. The most important thing is that he shouldn't, A, be breeding the cats, and B, he should be looking for responsible homes that are going to sterilize them. So it's quite difficult finding homes for cats in South Africa. Mm. That's the first thing. So, Sebeko, I would strongly recommend that you tell your housemate to contact his local SPCA or Animal Welfare Society and contact them for assistance. Because if he doesn't want the mom or he doesn't want the kittens, then the SPCA can help him with that, and also help him to sterilize, because this is going to happen all the time. Yeah. And there's lots and lots of cats in the country that need homes, that don't have homes. Mm. So please tell him to contact the SPCA. You can go onto www.nspca.co.za, and they've got a list of all SPCAs in the country's contact number.
Right. Because, I mean, as you say, there's so many homeless kitties right now. He won't be able to sell them.
No.
not for anything. Because for there's peanuts. Just so many.
Yeah. No. So SPCA is going to help. Exactly. Yeah.
And then you won't have the current kitties he's got. SPCA would also help with that.
All of them.
Okay, cool. Yeah. All right, now we're going to speak to Corinne Spottiswood. Corinne, you've been a regular guest. We love having you here because you've got so much information that you can help us to understand this world that we live in. Now, today we're going to focus on insects. Now, I'm one of these people, I love every animal, but there's one animal that I have a phobia, I'm terrified, and that is a grasshopper. I don't know why. Cricket, I'm fine. Not a problem, but bring a locust or a grasshopper anywhere near me, I lose control, Ainsley. I literally cannot. I've embarrassed my family.
I'm laughing because I'm sympathizing.
Are you the same?
No, but I extend to all flying bugs. I can deal with the spider. I can deal with the lion. I can deal with the snake. charging elephant, anything, but a flying bug, Christmas beetles, I turn into
biggest. Love them.
Oh, no.
No, I love holding them and save their lives out the pool and everything. But a locust, and especially at the botanical gardens.
Those big colored ones.
I tell you what, I scream, I run, I lose it. I'm like a mental person at the I can't handle it. But they're necessary. Hey, Corinne, yes. We need these little guys in our lives.
We do, and I understand that you know, one doesn't like grasshoppers that much. I mean, they jump, you know, they're a bit scary. And if you hold them, they can give you the males. They have got mandibles that are, you know, they can give you a bit of a nip. But
they can? Well,
I never hold grasshoppers.
I didn't know that.
But they're part of our ecosystem. They eat plants. And then their droppings contribute towards compost, so you do actually need grasshoppers. And a lot of creatures eat them. The ones you see in the botanical gardens they eat clivias, and they eat, well, there are various different ones that eat different things, but depending what they eat, if they eat toxic leaves, then obviously they're not that popular amongst the other animals that eat them. But the birds eat them. Other creatures also eat them, so they're part of our ecosystem. So they contribute towards compost, and they are eaten, and they're food as well.
Yes.
And that's with most insects. I'm just fascinated with insects. Each one has a different story. We take in the Kloofendal Nature Reserve, we take children for walks, the school children, and we teach them about the value of insects. I think most people don't appreciate how important they are, because if you think of the pollinators, your bees and butterflies, a lot of insects they eat nectar from the flowers, and then in doing so, their pollen gets attached to their bodies. If they've got little hairy bodies, they go to the next flower, so they pollinate flowers. They produce seeds. I mean, that enables the flower to produce seeds. Without pollinators, you wouldn't have seeds. Mm-hmm. Without seeds, you don't have plants. Mm-hmm. So it's really important when one doesn't think about it. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a shortage of bees. I think as people, we use insecticides a lot. You know, we don't like mosquitoes, and obviously the farms have to spray that the beetles don't eat the leaves, you know, of the cabbages or whatever. And then a lot of these pollinators are actually killed. And that's why it's very important to have biodiversity, to have a place where these insects can actually survive, and
yes.
You have and have different ones, because insects need different habitats. I mean, they need different things that they eat. If they are herbivorous or if they're carnivorous, they need, you know, a biodiversity. So the nature reserve where the Friends of Kloofendal have their environmental educational program is very important, because it's got a lot of biodiversity. You can teach children, adults, everybody respect for nature, that you actually, there's a whole interdependence of plants and animals there. So insects, yes, everything has a story.
Yes.
So whatever the participants in our guided walks find, they you can tell something about it. Like, you've got bugs and beetles, everybody thinks they're maybe, well, not everybody, but they're the same, but they're not, they're different, and they do different things. Your bugs are like your cicadas. They have a tube. You know, they don't have teeth or anything. They pierce and they suck whatever they eat. Mm-hmm. So they can be eating. Well, the cicadas eat. They suck juice from the plants. So they have their piercing mouth parts. Then you've got your beetles that chew. They've got these So if you look at leaves of plants and you see there are bits missing, then you know you've got a beetle. Or it could also be a caterpillar, of course. Caterpillars are very active at the moment, because in springtime everything's just, you know, the leaves are all nice green, and you know, they taste great. So that's when your butterflies, then the butterflies in wintertime, they're in their pupal stage. And then they come out in spring, because that's when there's nice fresh food for their, after they lay the eggs hatch, and there's a nice fresh food for the caterpillars to eat. And then the caterpillars must be kept in balance, because at the moment you've got the acria, that's orange butterfly, that you find on the wild peach trees. They're very common.
Yes.
And those caterpillars are voracious. They can just chow all the leaves, you know.
Oh, really?
So there needs to be balance, so you don't want all the leaves to be chowed. So you have animals that eat those caterpillars, and the acria caterpillars are eaten by the Diederik's cuckoo.
Oh, and they're migrants. So
they're migrants because in wintertime there's no food, because there are no caterpillars, because in wintertime there's no food for the caterpillars to eat. So the Diederik's cuckoos don't have food.
And then they migrate to come to time their arrival
and
with the hatching of the larva of the caterpillars.
That's it, and you can hear them. You know, they hear the Diederik,
yeah.
And it's it's just very interesting. When they come back, so of course they go to hotter climate, yes, where there is food for them, but they breed in South Africa. So when they come back, they initially, the travel is a bit tiring for them, so they don't really call. But then, yes, when you hear them calling, it's the male.
Okay.
To entice the female.
And are they also, do they steal nests from other birds?
Absolutely, yes. They do. All the cuckoos do that. You've got your red-chested cuckoo, you've got your
cuckoo. That's a pit mayfrog.
Yes.
I heard my first one the other day. Yes. I was so happy that they're back.
Yes. That's a funny name, really, pit mayfrog. It really sounds a bit odd. But anyway, the Dedek's cuckoo, yeah. So they parasitize the weavers.
Mm.
So you have your weavers now. They're busy. The male's making the nest, yes, and then as you know, the female checks that he does a good job. And if the job is not good enough, she tells him. No, it's actually he does.
Oh,
he tells tells him that's not good enough. I'm not going to mate with you, with a nest like that. So he keeps building nests till she's satisfied. Then he mates with her. And then she's left to look after the babies. And she lays her eggs, and he goes off, and he goes and makes friends with another female.
Okay.
Tut, tut, female. Tut, tut. But then, so then she sits on her eggs, the female weaver, and then the Dedek cuckoos, the male comes along and harasses her, and she gets, he puts his head in the nest, and she gets fed up, the female weaver, and then she will chase him, the Dedek cuckoo male, and the Dedek cuckoo female will then go in quickly and lay one egg.
Sneaky.
And her eggs look the same as the weaver eggs.
Oh.
So the weaver mom comes back.
So she lays the egg with the weaver's eggs.
She puts it, in between just one, and then she goes and finds other nests where she will lay just one. And then, then the weaver mom comes back and doesn't know that there's another egg. Another incubation period of the cuckoo egg is shorter than the weaver one. So the cuckoo egg will hatch first, and then weaver mom will have to feed the little cuckoo, and then
she actually feeds it.
Oh, yes. And then she feeds it. Yeah, it's interesting. She actually feeds it with insects. You know, the weavers, they are seed eaters, mm-hmm, but the weaver chicks are fed with insects. And then so the cuckoo is at an advantage, because now when the weaver eggs hatch, the chicks are smaller. And so weaver mom's got a really hard time when she's got to feed that extra greedy cuckoo chick.
Yes.
So often the weavers breed twice in a season, but if there's been a cuckoo chick there, then she's too exhausted to have another litter. Mm, yeah,
but you call it another litter. That's so brood. Interesting.
Yeah.
Gee. And now tell me, we Ainsley, you mentioned Christmas beetles. Mm. I love Christmas beetles. I think they've got so much character, if a beetle can have a character. Now, they also come around sort of November. So where do they come from?
They come out of your compost heap, if I'm not mistaken. They lay their eggs. Okay, and then the beetle comes out. Okay, so the beetles are, they have a pupal stage. Okay, and so when the adult then comes out of the pupa, they will fly around and eat your leaves and your flowers, your roses and your veggie leaves. and then they will mate eggs, and I think if I'm not mistaken they lay them in the compost heap, and then the larvae come out, and then they pupate, and then you get the adults come out, and then they fly in summertime.
For a long time.
No, they come out now when it's snow.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
I remember I used to tell my children that the Christmas beetles were Santa's spies to come and see if they were well behaved enough to get a Christmas gift.
Did it work?
And
were they well behaved?
Oh, yes. Oh. They always used to worry when there was a Christmas beetle around. They used to, is he watching out for us? But they don't last long, because then they just disappear sort of by the end of December.
Look,
January.
It's all about propagation of your species.
Mm.
So the adults come out like butterflies. The butterflies are also, they don't live long.
Yes.
The reason is that in nature you mate and you produce your offspring.
Progeny.
And that's, then you've done your deed, your purpose of life.
Yes.
So your same to butterflies, your beetles don't last that long, because once they are adults, they fly, they find a mate, she lays her eggs, and then they have done
Don't have to raise their offspring, so there's no purpose for them.
They don't. Yeah. The offspring, they look after themselves. Yeah, they. What I also want to say, I think you probably know, but it's quite a well-known story. But like the praying mantids, when they mate. You can have the male actually mating, and she, you know, the praying mantis are carnivores, and they will eat other insects, and she might eat her mate. While he's busy mating her, she can actually start eating him. Goodness. And it sounds very cruel, but the what you can say is that he's giving his protein for his offspring. Yes. So he's very sacrificial.
That's right.
But same with your spiders, you know. Okay, there's not insects now, we're not talking about arachnids, but your spiders also, the female, she makes the web, and she can eat the male by mistake. So, and the male's often smaller than she is. So when he comes to mate with her, he has to make it quite clear that he either makes a little, on the web, he makes a little sort of symbol, you know, a little code that, you know, that she knows, that she calms down, that it's not not prey. Or he might actually wrap her in silk and then mate with her, you know, otherwise to keep her, otherwise she might eat him. But again, it's if she does eat him, it's for the for the good of the species.
But now talking about spider, this is also the time of the year where, I don't know what they are, people call them rain spiders?
Yeah, the big ones, yes.
Yes, the big ones. Yes. Tell us about those.
Well, I can just tell you they're harmless, right? And we've got them in our house. The female, again, is bigger than the male. And they're active at night.
They can be huge.
They're huge, yes, they're huge. It can be as big as your hand. But they're really, they're harmless. They eat your mosquito. So, very sad the other day that our rain spider, because she moves around at night, actually, by mistake, was squashed in the door. We had a death in our family.
Oh, I know, I always name them. I give them names.
Oh, dear.
It makes them more unthreatening.
But if you think in nature again, if you're coming back to the function of insects, well, everything has a function. So you talk about your pollinators and then the compost makers. A lot of insects then contribute towards compost. They can break down your leaves and your wood. And your wood termites break down wood. Your harvest termites break down grass, and then it all contributes towards compost. But if you think of a termite mound, I'm thinking of the harvester one. You know, these mud-looking like termite mounds. They're hard. Mm-hmm. And they're sealed because the termites, they keep the temperature inside in a constant. So at the outside of the nest is sealed. They make it with mud and their saliva. Yes. And in there, they live, and they're sort of in a big combination. You know, the workers all have different functions, and the queen, there's one, and one king. And they what they do then is lay eggs and then the workers look after the the workers look after the king and queen. They look after the babies, you know, the little termites, and then they make the nest builders, the harvesters who get the food, and then the soldiers who protect the nest. And then the function, you can say, in ecology, the function of the termite mound is that it aerates the soil, because these termite tunnels go right down to water level. And so it aerates the soil. It makes they provide compost. It becomes compost. So termite mounds are very important. And the termites themselves are food for lots of things, for lizards, birds. And
some of the best birding you'll do is at a termite rise. Yes,
and particularly after rain, then the queen will sense that there's a need for procreation. I mean, to have to lay eggs that produce fertile termites, which are your flying termites.
Is that the flying ant that we say?
The ants also do. So the ants and termites are different orders. Your termites are more primitive. They belong to Diptera, the family. Not Diptera, what is it called? Anyway, they're more primitive. They don't have a pupal stage, whereas your ants belong to Hymenoptera, the same as your wasp and your bees. They have a pupal stage, and they are more advanced. But they're also flying ants and flying termites.
So the ones that we get in Joburg that fly and drop their four wings.
The ones that drop their wings are termites.
Yes.
The ones that do not drop their wings are ants. Yeah. So they actually did different things. So the ones that you get coming into your houses after rain that drop their wings are your termites, and they drop their wings to start a new family, a new colony. And yeah, you must actually keep your windows closed, because they will probably go for your wood. They might go for for your skirting boards or for your rafters in your roof. And it is a real problem. They can do that.
And why are they drawn to light? Because, I mean, if you sit in your car with your car lights on, they mob the lights.
Yes, I'm not sure. I do. Of course, they attract each other. So your wood termites, obviously termites are herbivores, but you have got a lot of carnivorous insects, you can say, who are attracted to lights, because that's where the other ones all are. They seem to be attracted, so there's a lot of food for them at the lights. They do actually seem to die, you know, at the lights. And that's also why you get your Your geckos are also attracted to your light.
Because
they eat the mosquitoes and whatever is attracted to the light. What is a problem with lights is that, if, like in the nature reserve where I work, is that you have the houses around the nature reserve have lights, and the white lights attract insects, so the insects are attracted away from the reserve, which is not a good thing.
Where there's pesticides and all sorts. Mm. Corinne, just before we let you go, we were talking about spiders, the one spider that everybody is very scared of, and that's the button spider.
Mm-hmm.
Are they quite common in Gauteng?
They're quite common, and people are petrified of them.
Yes, they are.
And they are, will doom them, you know, they will kill them. So rather, if you really worries you, just get put a glass over it and then slide some paper in between the surface that the spider's on, and put your and then take the spider outside and put it outside because it does a good job there.
Yes,
I would like to say to people, just don't kill everything.
Don't kill. It's not necessary.
It's not necessary, and these little things that I know, I've got a very big twig insect, stick insect in our display, because we've got an educational center in the reserve, and we have a lot of specimens there from different insects and skulls from the mammals that we have and whatever. But the stick insect, everybody says, oh, that looks so scary. It does, but you can actually, you know, when it was still alive and I got it, you can actually hold them.
They're very placid. They're very sweet. No, well, I think the message there is we need our insects. They all have a role to play in various ways, whether it's to keep down, you know, as you were saying, the spiders eat the cockroaches and the mosquitoes. They all work together. Corinne, thank you so much. Again, quickly, before we run out of time, how can people get hold of you in Kloofendal or come for one of your tours?
Yes, we've got the website, www.kloofendalfriends.org.za. And then we also have a Facebook. It's called Friends of the Kloofendal Nature Reserve. That's the Facebook. And then, and on the website, you'll find our contacts. And you also find the guided walks that we offer for the public. As over weekends, we've got 2-hour guided walks. We've got frog evenings. We've got scorpion and spider walk. We've got insect walks. We've got all sorts of different themes. That's on the website. We also then school groups. We like those are private ones. Those are during the week. And it's all the information is on the website. We'd love school groups to more of them, because we are curriculum-based.
Mm.
We've got guides, Vergasa guides, who know all about the ecology.
Wonderful.
And can
it's very, very necessary. Corinne, thank you so much for coming in. We're running out of time, but I must just say, Ainsley Sebeko has just replied back, and he's concerned. He says the NSPCA will kill the kittens.
Nah, that's rubbish.
And he's got 2 buyers already. So,
well, you need to make sure that those people know how to take care of them, because you have a responsibility if you're going to make money off of selling other animals.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
all of them.
And don't let those kittens breed and have the mommy spayed. Definitely. Guys, we've run out of time again. I'll be back again next week, as mentioned earlier. Next week I'm on, and then Ainsley and I are going to take turns, which is going to be so much fun. Give me a bit of time to get Canine Zone running and all the rest. We'll be back next week. I'm going to have Viv from Saints, and we're going to have Tracy from Barking Mad. And until then, give all your pets big hugs from us.
Animal Central on cliffcentral.com.